Hello friends, and welcome to an extra special episode of Compilator. Today I'm leaving my comfort zone and recording an episode that's A, in English, and B, recorded in person at the Swiatek 2024 conference. And a big thanks to my podcast neighbor, Avkodat and Active Solution, for loaning me their equipment. A big thank you. With me today, I have Egil Hansen. Welcome.
Thank you.
Could you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes. What's my usual intro? So I'm a developer at a Danish IT consultancy. I live in Iceland and I'm Microsoft MVP. And I became that MVP because I started doing open source back 4 or 5 years ago and found my own little corner of the .NET ecosystem where I could sort of have an impact, and the good folks at Microsoft appreciated that, so they have given me the MVP award a couple of years now in a row, so that's nice. And then I get to, you know, also come to conferences like this and travel and you know, share my thoughts about various topics. So it's that's sort of me in a nutshell, I guess.
And yesterday you shared your thoughts, very, very good thoughts, I thought, in a talk called Blazor Testing A to Z. And I really liked that talk. It started out very broad. What's a definition of a good test, a valuable test? And it slowly zoomed in from end-to-end testing to unit testing of Blazor. And I thought that was a very educational way of presenting the material. Really appreciated it. And probably it's going to be on YouTube, not by the time this is broadcast, maybe, but if it is, we'll include it in the show notes.
Yes, I did do that talk at NTC Porto last year as well. I don't think they have uploaded that yet.
Okay.
But it's definitely going to show up on the internet at some point.
And as soon as it will, we'll link to it, because it's a very interesting talk.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So my point in that talk about starting at sort of a high level and saying, well, starting with a discussion of what does it mean to write valuable tests? And the whole notion is, I've seen that over and over again, and I've certainly been guilty of that myself as well, is, well, I need to write some tests for any kind of code. It doesn't have to be Blazor, but it's in general. And you just go for the same hammer you always use. And I recently read a book by Vladimir Konikov's Unit Testing Principle, Patterns and Practices. And he spends a bit of time initially there talking about, you know, actual thinking about, like, be intentional and deliberate about the kind of test you write. Because unit test is not always going to be the right solution. End-to-end tests, integration tests, what have you, may work better in certain scenarios. But then on the other hand, you also have people that make a lot of noise of just always doing integration or end-to-end testing because they feel like that always gives the most balance. But I think my learning from the industry is that there's very, very few dogmatic things in our industry. There's always edge cases. Now I'm guilty of saying always. But in this context, I think it's fair, though. There's generally always exceptions to the rule. And in quite a few instances, there's quite a few exceptions. Right, lots of exceptions to general recommendations, general best practices. And now I'm doing air quotes which your listeners can't see. So I like the more pragmatic approach to things. Not talking about best practices in general. Talking about Dan North has an excellent talk also on YouTube about good properties of software development instead of talking about best practices. Because best practice is something that you really have to, if you don't do exactly what the best practice says, you're sort of in violation. It's an either or, right? You can't be almost best practice. Well, then you're still going to, you know, feel bad about yourself, right? So he talks about reframing things as good properties, for example, of software development, and that's sort of a target you can move towards, depending on the scenario, depending on the situation, depending on the setting you are in at that given time, the constraints you have. Like, you maybe have a budget constraint, maybe you have a smaller team than you would like. So you build the thing that is going to be good enough and solve a problem with, you know, whatever you have at hand, and. Vladimir Konikov's take was also that don't just write tests because you have to write tests because somebody tell you or because you always want to do whatever kind of testing you prefer. Think about think about and be deliberate about picking the kinds of tests that will give the most value to you. And the value is gained when you actually run the tests. And there's also, you know, everything has a cost in terms of developing those tests, right? You have to develop them, you have to maintain them, and you also have to have them not be a burden on your development progress of your main thing, your production code, the thing that you are actually testing. So so that's sort of that angle you want to take. And when you talk about Blazor testing, it really depends on kind of thing you're building Blazor. Are you building Blazor applications or building, you know, Blazor component libraries? Then there's probably going to be different strategy that will give you sort of the most yield, the most bang for the buck in terms of what you've invested in the test you're writing.
So my experience with testing anything web related is that it's very often it ends up a house of cards. Mm. It's hard to find a balance between being specific and being resilient. Mm. And I thought that was very interesting with your talk, because you showed end-to-end testing with Playwright, mm-hmm. Which really takes in account everything, like it runs an actual browser to run the test. But I really also appreciated the next part of your talk, where you demonstrated BUnit, mm-hmm. which is a framework that you developed for testing Blazor components in isolation. Mm. And that's much closer to unit tests, or it is unit tests, more or less.
Yeah, that's the goal, at least. It should feel, if you're used to unit tests, you should feel at home with that.
What's the story behind BUnit? How did it come about?
Well, it's... I think it was 2019, around that time frame, where the first preview bits of Blazor had just been, you know, shown, shared with the world. Steve Sanderson sort of, I think it was a talk at NDC Oslo, where he sort of showed the initial concept of running something in the browser that, you know, does what Blazor does there. So I was curious. I'm mostly a back-end developer at, you know, professionally, but I've always done a lot of front-end work previous in my career. So it's always, you know, nice to come home to HTML and CSS again, and thought, well, if I can use C#, which is my primary programming language at work, and do things like that, then it would be a fun thing to give a go. And I started, like I think most people around that time, building a Bootstrap component library for Blazor, just to, you know, get a feel for it. And I say that was, you know, for me, it's I feel a little bit uncomfortable writing a code without writing tests for it. It's about, you know, it helps me keep the scope in my head of what's going on. I don't feel smart enough to have a huge complex code base and keep that all fresh in memory and maybe go and refactor, change one thing, and then be confident that I haven't broken something over in the other part of the code base, right? So for me, it's hard to really get that sense of that good feeling you get when you're developing software and you're finishing things and you know that you're done. Reading a good book, one more page, or doing a puzzle and finally getting that last brick in, like that satisfaction you get from building something where you have a good feeling about it. I can't really do that without tests. And at that point, there wasn't really any way of testing Blazor components besides, you know, hitting F5 and, you know, running them in the browser and clicking around and seeing what was going on. You could definitely use, I think Playwright wasn't really a thing at that point, but Selenium was there. So you could do that, but it was tedious at best, right? It wasn't a good experience. And especially for developing something like a component library, where I just want to test that individual component in isolation. I'm not building a huge app. So I started sort of deep diving into the code base and figuring out how can we actually control and render out a single individual Blazor component, or maybe component plus child components, and then assert, inspect that, and look at various other things about that thing throughout its life cycle. So that was sort of the origin.
Just a side note, mm-hmm. you said something very interesting, pressing F5 and testing the thing. I think the single most valuable revelation during my career is that for me, one of the key things about tests is I don't have to start the entire application to write code. I can just verify it with a test. I don't have to start up, find the screen I'm currently building, make sure I'm logged in as the correct user, and so on and so forth. It really shortens the feedback loop.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm glad there's a way of testing Blazor components as well in this way.
Yeah.
I overheard another person who was at your talk asking about whether or not Microsoft has anything similar, or is BUnit like the go-to solution for testing right now?
Yeah, so I think it was in the March, April timeframe, I started building what later became to be called BUnit. It was called, I think, Razor Components Testing Library originally, because very Microsoft product name, you know, but I realized it wasn't very Google friendly because all the individual words in that name would show up in many different ways. And then, you know, the name BUnit came to me, later in that year. But around September, I think Steve Sanderson, the sort of main architect of Blazor, also did a prototype for testing, like for unit or component testing. And it was sort of just thrown out there, and you can still find it as he has a blog post where he introduces it and says, this is sort of the concept. And there were many overlaps to what I was doing. I hadn't really made a lot of noise about BUnit at that time. But there was also some things I was struggling with, like completely understanding the inner workings of the Blazor renderer and how it handles life cycles and captures updates to the document object model, to the HTML that is getting rendered whenever you change something in the component. So I took all the good stuff from his prototype and integrated it into 9 and combined that also with another library I wrote during the fall there, called, it's an extension to AngleSharp. AngleSharp is the library we use in BUnit to represent the document object model that basically is rendered out. But I wrote an additional library on top of that called AngleSharp Diffing that has that, it's a semantic comparer for HTML or for AngleSharp document object models trees. And that allows BUnit through AngleSharp Diffing to go through to rendered sets of markup and compare them and understand whether or not they are equal or not from a semantics point of view with an understanding of how the semantics of HTML works. So things like there's simple things like insignificant white space that you have to deal with. There's the order of attributes. All of those kinds of things are handled, and that means that you are able to write. You're able to assert that the components are producing markup that looks that has the right structure, but not necessarily is, you know, if you just do a assert equals between two strings, it would fall down quite easily. So I had that as well. But I think around New Year's 2019-20, I believe, I reached out to the Blazor team and said, well, I'm having fun doing this, but I also don't want to be in competition with the Microsoft version of that, because quite naturally, most times you are that. The Microsoft OSS offering will be the default choice for most people, and that's completely fair. That's just how the .NET ecosystem works. So I reached out and said, hey, I'm doing this, but I don't want to keep doing that if you're going to do your own thing, because then, you know, for me, it's been a fun challenge to build, but I don't want to keep working on it if nobody's going to end up using it or a few people will use it. And then, but they thought about it a little bit and they just decided to say, well, we're not going to do our own thing. We're going to, point towards yours. So if you go and read the docs on the Microsoft.learn website about testing components, you will find them pointing to Playwright for end-to-end scenarios and to BUnit for component testing. So that was nice of them, but it's also now a burden I carry in some ways, right? So But yeah, but that's how it sort of ended up. And I as far as I know, I don't think there's any other offering specific for Blazor out there that sort of does a similar thing.
I'd like to shift the topic a little bit, mm-hmm. And I'm going to give some context here. Listeners of this podcast know that I've in the past been skeptical towards Blazor. I've changed my opinion dramatically, especially since .NET 8 came out. I've also been a huge fan of HTMX. And in a sort of way, they compete in the same space. Both offer a way to build highly interactive web applications in slightly different ways with slightly different philosophies. And one of the things I was most enthusiastic about with Blazor was the component model. But until .NET 8, it was very much married to the whole WebSocket / WASM mechanics.
Mm. Yeah.
And in .NET, we got proper server-side rendering, which I think opens up the possibility to use Blazor-style component development mm-hmm. and using HTMX for the interactivity part, which is very nice for someone who grew up with making web apps with PHP and web forms. I know it's popular to talk down on web forms, but I was pretty productive back in those days.
Yeah, honestly, web forms, like you see React, Vue, all the component-driven front-end frameworks for now, web forms was the first kid on the block that did that. That was the OG web components or components model for UI, and that came from WinForms before that, which was for building Windows applications. So yeah, it's you were super productive in web forms.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't without problems.
No.
But it was a very pleasant development experience.
Yeah. Honestly, I think the biggest problem was back then, if we want to take a historic perspective on it, was that they tried to take WinForms and give the developer the same, developer experience for building web applications, web forms, which meant that they tried to control the generated HTML and CSS quite a bit. And it all was only later in the life cycle of web forms where they opened up a bit and gave you as a developer more control over the markup that was being produced. So it could have been a much bigger success, I believe, if they had been less opinionated by the default controls that came with web forms. If they'd been less opinionated about the markup that was being produced by them, that would have, I think, painted it in a completely different light.
Then also they fought against web technologies with trying to emulate the WinForms experience with the view state and everything.
Well, so something thing you can see with HTMX is that the view state is now part of the markup. Like you define your interactions through declarative means right in the markup. So in a sense. But yeah, it wasn't. It worked really well for line of business application, internal applications, but didn't really scale to large, multi-million visitors kind of websites. That certainly had its shortcomings.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today, because besides the fact that you have deep knowledge of how Blazor works under the hood, I saw you posting on the HTMX Discord where you had a very interesting experiment trying to marry HTMX and Blazor, basically replacing the interactivity part of Blazor with HTMX, if I understood correctly.
So yes and no. So I think you're completely right in terms of that Blazor is moving in a new direction with .NET 8. So as you said previously, we had Blazor Server, which was a stateful component hierarchy per user. And there would be a SignalR connection, a WebSocket connection to a to a small JavaScript-based client library that would basically drive interactions. And whenever you did something, that would be a round trip using the WebSocket to the Blazor server bits that would update the component tree and send a very efficient diff of that tree down to the client, which would then use that to patch the actual DOM in the browser. And that is actually technology that I've been using a few times for building small, like internal line of business applications, because it's super efficient. Like you have that same feeling as you had as a web form developer, where you can get going really quick and you can get something that works very well. But obviously there is some shortcomings with the technology, right? You have that delay, communication delay when you click the button. If your data center is on the other side of the earth, you have 500 milliseconds one way and then 500 milliseconds for the update to the component tree, the render tree, to come back to the client in the browser. So it's going to feel sluggish, but it works really well for internal applications, line of business application, like controlled amount of users. And then you have Blazor WebAssembly, which is everything in the client. And it's essentially just similar to whatever other apps we have, like React or Angular, those kind of things, where everything is running in the client and you need a web API to talk to on the other side of things. And there's some pros and cons to that compared to, for example, the JavaScript ecosystem in terms of typically people will bring up download size, because you actually have to have a full, very efficient but small and surprisingly small .NET runtime, but still you have to have a couple of megs of just base libraries that need to be loaded into the browser. Usually, I think the Hello World is 1.1 megabyte now, which is not a lot, but that is before you add any of your own logic. So there's certainly things there. And with .NET 8, they have introduced Blazor server-side rendering, which is just using the Blazor component model and rendering out just static HTML that we are sending to the client. So client clicks on a link, go to a page, that causes, whatever is at that page, the Razor component tree there to get rendered out and turned into markup and sent to the client. So it's a new version of the ASP.NET Core MVC, for example, or Razor Pages, which is a related cousin to Razor components. And you can use that to produce static websites, essentially. Oh, well, static in a sense that it's static generated in the sense of the client, like the good old-fashioned Web 2.0 model. And then Microsoft and Blazor has a few enhancements built in, like enhanced navigation. So if you turn that on, and I believe it's on by default, when you click a link, Blazor server sites, like the Blazor JavaScript bits that are loaded, also with static rendering, will intercept that and do a fetch request, much like HTMX does. And say, well, go to this page and just render it. You will have the full thing rendered, but it will like patch it in a way. So, and there's also enhanced form navigation. So if you have a form you submit and you have turned that on, it will just submit the form and it'll just replace in the response again in the markup, similar to HTMX. And the third thing they also have is streaming rendering, where you go to, maybe you have a slow loading page, or rather maybe, like the canonical example is that when you do file a new project in Blazor, you get a weather forecast page. You go to that page. It will first just show you loading. And then 1 second later, it will then it's simulating going to a database or some service. And then the data will be there. And then it will stream down the other bits. That's also something where they've built in technology such that when you go to that thing, it'll just start by showing the loading. And then when the other thing is ready, it will, instead of doing another request, it'll just continue streaming that new content. So it'll basically keep the connection open while it's waiting for the remainder of the content to show up. Now, so we have that, which is in and of itself a good improvement from just static HTML and full page cycles or request response cycles. But what I saw when I started looking into HTMX more deeply was that between the fully interactive Blazor server bits that does have advantages of being, you're on the server, your logic is running on the server, and you have direct access to all the internal APIs, web services, or databases that you might want to call. So you don't need to develop an API like you do with proper, single page applications, where you have all the code in the client, and then they call something called an API over, HTTPS, right? A JSON API, for example. You don't have to deal with that. So So with HTMX, it seems like there's a there might be a good place in between the basic functionality that Blazor server-side rendering offers in terms of making the thing feel a bit more smooth and not have a full request response cycle and a full replacing all the thing in the browser and replacing the full DOM and putting a new thing in, and the Blazor server bits. And that's sort of what I started playing around with, the same. How can we marry these two? And ideally, we would get very far from Blazor just server-side render pages and get very close to having the same functionality and flexibility that we have with Blazor server, but have maybe even a more responsive experience from the user, because the functionality that I where I really like HTMX is that you declare in your markup that you return what happens when we, so you can do sort of do when I click this button, disable the button, and then do the request to the backend, and when there's something back, put that new content in here and maybe re-enable the button, and you have that ability so that it will seem responsive to the user, even though there's a maybe 1 second round trip to the server and back, because the button will disable immediately because it's all controlled on the client side through the HTMX sort of hooks that we have there. I think potentially it can feel a lot more responsive and feel a lot more nice by still retaining all the benefits we have of having statelessness on the server, on the Blazor side of the server. So you don't have the WebSocket connection, all of that going. So I'm still very much in the experimental phase, but I want to see how well we can merge those two technologies so that we can leverage the awesome details that is HTMX on the client side, while still also leveraging the very, you know, the fantastic component model of Blazor on the server side, and have that be stateless. Because as long as you stay stateless on the server, you can, the things that become hard about building single page applications, like managing state, becomes much more simple, because you basically state, you throw that away, and then you recreate that to some extent when you get a new request. But that also simplifies things a whole lot. Like, we have all those state like redox and all those kinds of patterns we're dealing with in the front end world that complicate things. But they're also there because there's a need to, you know, manage state somehow. And just going stateless, that gives you also much greater ability to cache things and do all sorts of improvements to how things are working. So I like the idea. I'm curious to see if I can actually manage to make it something that is nice, that has a good developer experience at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And one thing I appreciate with the new .8 Blazor is the features that you mentioned, mm-hmm. with streaming rendering, mm-hmm. and enhanced navigation. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they're all HTTP based. There's no WebSocket involved. Oh,
they work very much like HTMX does. It's a bit, it's an AJAX fetch request triggered by JavaScript. So in a sense, the blazor.web.js file that you include when you do file a new project and choose Blazor server side rendered type of approach to it, it has the rudimentary functionality that HTMX also brings to the table. So it's a bit like using HX Boost at the top level of your app. Mm. So it could also very well be whatever I end up experimenting with, sort of the library I'm playing around with creating for this will be completely obsolete by .NET 9, because the Microsoft Blazor team has maybe been inspired, or clearly they're thinking in the same direction as what HTMX is doing already, and are just enhancing that functionality. So we'll see, but there's definitely clear overlaps, and somebody familiar with HTMX will also be able to easily pick up and understand what's going on there under the hood.
I'd like to finish up this discussion asking you, because I've noticed that the pendulum in tech is swinging back from very complex front-end applications back to the server, back to server rendering. As an MVP and someone who moves about in the Blazor community, how are you perceiving Blazor adoption?
So in general, I can see adoption is rising on a broad spectrum. But I do think that one of the one of the things that people who are, you know, actually building things with Blazor in general, be it, you know, Blazor Server or Blazor WebAssembly or now the new various modes that we have right now, it is the ease and, you know, ease of the component model. It has that same web forms kind of a feel where you feel productive. So if you are, if you're at home with C#, if you're at home with just HTML and CSS, then you can be hugely productive in quite fast, and you can easily throw something together. So I think that is something that is pulling in quite a few people.
It's a bit of a chicken and egg situation where companies don't know if there are Blazor developers and Blazor developers don't know if there's Blazor jobs. So
that was a common conversation back 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that anymore on the various social platforms. Like, there are certainly Blazor is not as huge as React, Vue, or some of the other large libraries there. But that's like from Microsoft's point of view, what we can see there is that Microsoft is actually with .NET 8 and will continue to push that with .NET 9. At least that's the plans. I'm sort of gathering right now. You can see the public roadmaps on GitHub saying that, well, there's the various previous technologies for doing server-side rendered pages like the ASP.NET Core, web forms, MVC, and Razor pages for that matter, that are being pushed a bit in the background. Microsoft seems to be focusing on Blazor as the all-encompassing, it's like the web technology they want to push. So I think that will, with all the enhancements and things planned for Blazor and just ASP.NET Core in general for .NET 9, that will give it a much greater uptick than it has already had.
Egil, thank you so much for coming in and chatting about Blazor and Bunit.
It was my pleasure, Bartek.
And hopefully we'll have you back.
Always. Just let me know.
Thank you.